All right, guys, welcome back. This is episode 8.
8, yeah.
8. Here with Mundo.
What's up, y'all?
All right, guys, so we're going to have a little bit of a talk today about why we do certain strength exercises and why we have, specific requirements for what we want, what we're looking for at the ideal technique when it comes to pressing and squatting and deadlifting, and why how you do something matters. So that's kind of what we're going to get into today.
Okay, so when we're talking about like regular strength work, just building up on weightlifting, or like something specific?
So I think the best example of this is using a back squat, for instance, because there's a lot of different techniques that you can use in a back squat, and there are some that'll carry over into your clean and jerk and your snatch a little bit better than others. So one thing that we want to see when we're having you guys work up to your squat maxes is that we're not getting excessively bent over, because our goal is to always kind of maintain that upright posture in all of our squatting, just so that we can easily carry it over into positional strength for that snatch and clean and jerk. But it's easy to get caught up in how much weight am I squatting versus how am I squatting. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, and that makes sense. And I've seen people squat really well up to maybe like 75-80%. And then for some reason that jump in percentage, even if it's just 5%, it seems to mess with their positions. And sometimes I wonder if that's like their inability to maintain the same abdominal pressure when they're squatting, or the upright position, or there's some element that's missing from their strength work or their technique work. And I know squatting is probably not exactly transferable to the Olympic lifts in a specific way, but in general strength, it's very important.
Yeah, and I mean, the general strength component of the back squat, because I mean, well, an important thing to remember is if it isn't a snatch or a clean and jerk, it's an accessory exercise.
Right.
Those are the only two lifts that matters. Everything else, you know, bench pressing and curls are both in that same category of accessory exercise. However, the bench press or, you know, bench press or curls is not as good at carrying over as our back squats. But it's still not a primary exercise. So how much weight you can actually back squat, I personally feel like it's less important than how you handle that weight. Because if you're having to really lean over and let those hips shoot really far back, you may have gotten that weight up, but you got it up in a way that's not really going to help you clean very much, because that torso angle isn't really staying the same. So what I want to kind of see is that we're staying upright, and that the weight is primarily carried on the quads, and that people are letting those knees track forward and sitting straight down rather than trying to lean over and sit back. The problem with that is that, you know, for all of our egos, is we can squat a little bit more if we do lean over a little bit, and maybe we put the bar a little bit lower, or we don't go rock bottom. You know, so if you go to just below parallel versus as deep as you possibly can squat, you're focusing more on how much weight can you squat than how low can I squat with an upright posture is more the question, I think, you know, that really is going to carry over.
Yeah, so for front squats, I know, like, I actually clean pretty close to what my front squat is, and I don't know if that's because I just haven't developed more leg strength in the front squat, or I'm just more efficient at my cleans. Because sometimes it feels like it's way easier to clean than it is to front squat. And like I'm able to maintain a better position out of a clean than I am in my front squatting posture. So there's I don't know if there's a deficiency in the way that I squat, but I just know that when I get to those upper ranges of front squats, then that's when I have a hard time maintaining the upright position. It's just like you said, you know, yeah, I can front squat the weight, but it's not in an ideal position that I would want to do it in a clean, because I would miss the clean if I had that same front squat position. So what do you think about like foot stance when it comes to squats? Like, for instance, should your back squat, your front squat, your overhead squat, should all those be the same distance?
I think that in an ideal world, yeah, you kind of want them all to be, you know, you want a back squat where you front squat, because you are looking for those accessory exercises to carry over as much as you can. So you're going to be wanting to try to clean and overhead squat and snatch in those same stances. However, I have noticed that most people, while trying to keep the same stance, usually move the feet a little bit wider when they snatch than when they clean. Just because it is the wider base probably helps with stability to a certain degree. But I think that, you know, if it's in excess of like a half an inch from where you usually squat, you're probably moving your feet out too far. So yeah, I think that, you know, you want to be consistent across those things, but I think it's also good to try out, like, do I feel a little bit stronger, a little more narrow? Do I feel a little bit stronger, a little wider? And kind of figure out where you can actually maintain those positions. But keeping in mind that we're not trying to alter the stance so that we can put more weight on the bar. You want your stance to be where it allows you to sit all the way down and upright, not necessarily where it allows you to squat the most weight possible, because we're not powerlifting.
Right. Yeah, so and the reason the squats, like we mentioned before, you want to get low because you want to be able to catch low in the clean and jerk and snatch. So like doing a quarter squat or a half squat isn't beneficial to a weightlifter, because you want to catch the low. You want to catch low because it gives you more space to get under more weight. And if you're able to reach those positions and you're mobile enough and you're strong in those positions, it's going to transfer over to your Olympic lifts. So for going back to some of that strength, that general strength work. So I know back squats and they don't carry over, but if you have strong legs, you're going to have strong lifts. And I think exactly. That if you work on the back squat, like let's say the cycle that you did, you added, you know, more weight in your front squat, but you were also doing back squat work in combination with that. So I think that a back squats are a main staple of just general strength work. And that's why we include them in the programming, because if, like I said, if you have strong legs, you're going to have strong lifts.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, like, I think that they, you know, any program you should be doing leg strength work at a minimum 2 days a week, and then if not, you know, 3 to 4, just using some sort of variations, because general strength is important. You can't lift heavy weights if you're not strong. You know, you can have awesome technique, but if you can't stand up, you can't stand up. But I think that, you know, you do want to try to keep things as closely related as you can, because then you'll get the most carryover you can from them. So it won't be a 100% carryover for most people. You know, some athletes, like if it's a direct one-to-one, you put a kilo on the squat, you put a kilo on the clean and jerk. Other people, it's not always as direct. But a lot of the strength in the back squat just makes you less tired when you clean and jerk. If, you know, your clean and jerk is, you know, your squat is only exceeding it by 10 kilos, like, you're going to be tired when you stand up from that clean. So it kind of gives you that reserve of energy. But it only does that if you're squatting in a way that gets you into the positions that are going to be kind of similar to what you're trying to do in the clean.
Okay. So you were talking about doing bicep curls and kind of accessory, like beach work. And that is important because you can work on some of the smaller muscles that don't get isolated during the compound lifts, because weightlifting is a compound lift. They're compound lift movements. And so one of the things that I wanted to see what your take was on is bench pressing. So for me, I don't like bench pressing at all. It hurts my shoulder, and I don't think it really has a whole lot of carryover into the Olympic lifts. So I don't really implement it in like my programming outlook, and I just don't really think it's a lift that weightlifters need to do. Like, I haven't bench pressed in 2 years, like, unless it's just messing around, like a, you know, somebody's already bench pressing and want to just try it out. But yeah, actually having bench press programmed for me, like, I really haven't done it at all, and I don't miss it.
Yeah, I think the bench press isn't the most important. Like, if I was picking you know, like a variety of upper body strength accessory exercises, I wouldn't rank it the highest. But I do think that there are some really good times to use a bench press. So I think, you know, and one part of the problem is we don't have a lot of space to do a whole lot of bench pressing. It takes up a lot of platform room. But I think that bench pressing for newer lifters is good because it's just a very good general upper body strength exercise. So if, you know, somebody's just starting out or they're a kid or, you know, they're just kind of getting used to doing athletic weightlifting things, the bench press is a really good exercise. It's fairly simple. It's moving, you know, it's not as complicated as doing a clean or a push press, and it teaches them to use strength in the arms. And I think that the bench press carries over to lockout strength a little bit, as long as you're using essentially, you know, a clean grip or a narrow grip, I generally like a little bit better. And then I think that there could be some potential benefit to bench press being utilized, especially early on in women's careers, because they generally have less upper body strength than men. I think that guys can probably get away with not really... Basically, women just have to work a little bit harder to increase that upper body strength. So that could probably be a good way to just get some heavier loading in for the shoulders and triceps. But I definitely don't think it's mandatory.
Right, yeah. So, like deadlifts, in our programs, when we say deadlift, it's in the snatch and clean and jerk positions.
Yes.
And so when we're talking about general strength and building those areas, we don't really use conventional deadlifts. And for maybe newer lifters, beginners, like we were talking, you know, you were talking about like somebody that's just starting out and they want to build up general strength, deadlifting is really good because it's going to help build that posterior chain. It builds more leg strength, hamstrings, things like that. But as far as for weightlifting, there's not really a direct carryover unless you're in the snatch and clean and jerk positions.
Yeah, so the way that I think of, you know, programming the deadlift is we're overloading the pull positions. So just like it doesn't matter if you can squat a half an inch below parallel and stand up a bunch of weight, if you can't deadlift the weight you're trying to clean and jerk in the correct positions, you're probably not going to make the clean and jerk. So the way that we use deadlifts is we make sure that they're holding the same positions that they would need to hold in a pull, with only maybe minor deviations if we're doing pretty heavy work. Like a little bit of out of position on the third rep or something like that's going to be fine, because we want to be overloading those positions and getting people strong off the floor and strong in that mid-thigh hang. So we might do pause positions on the way up, but it's a way to overload, but it's all postural. And that's kind of what the gist of today is. You know, it's all, weightlifting is almost all posture. So if you're doing your shoulder presses with the bar 2 inches off your shoulders and your forearms kind of back behind the bar and you're pushing it away and kind of getting some bad bar path on it, just to kind of, because you can kind of muscle a little bit more weight, that's not going to be as specific as if you try to press from your jerk position. It's the same thing with doing touch and go push presses, which is something I don't necessarily like very much unless you are trying to compete in CrossFit. But when you do push presses, you should be thinking of that as practicing your jerk dip and drive every time. So you shouldn't rush through that and just get them done. It's how are you doing the exercise? Are you doing a jerk to straight legs, or are you getting the bar overhead?
Yeah, so for that, especially we're talking about not doing touch and go reps. Weightlifting is about technique, speed, and precision, and we don't want sloppy touch and go reps. And that really carries over to everything.
Yeah, deadlifts, that stuff.
Even for squats, like I don't like bouncing out of the bottom too much. And for me, controlling the descent and then making sure I'm in a good postural position to stand up in is starting to matter more to me than just bouncing up and trying to get more weight. especially as I get older, I'm a master's lifter. I can't afford to let things get sloppy because it has a higher consequence. I'm not able to recover from an injury as quickly, and you know, the strength that I have now, I want to maintain well into, you know, my older years. But when we're talking about pushing, when the push press, the jerk, all those positions should carry over. So like the press should go make the push press stronger. The push press should make the power jerk stronger. The power jerk should make the jerk stronger, because you're working on the same lockout positions, the same upper body strength, and they should all be in relatively the same grip. So if you're push pressing and it's like right shoulder width, but you jerk like 6 inches away, like that's not going to have the same carryover as, you know, you would if you had the same hand position every single time. So, and when you're pressing, getting that back bow, like that, you look like a reverse bow trying to push the bar away from you and then overhead. It's just, you're making the movement more difficult, and it's carryover is not going to be good, and it's not going to be good for your back.
Yeah, I mean, the last thing you want to do is have the habit of when something feels heavy, you lean back, because leaning back on a jerk just doesn't feel good in the slightest. But it's interesting, if you looked at kind of technique posters from the era before 72, when the press was eliminated, the posters of the jerk position were radically different than modern weightlifting, because they were so strong in the press. If you look at the pictures, because they would lean back in the press a lot, they are a little lot more leaned back in the jerk, and their back leg is a lot stiffer, the chest is up a lot higher, and the bar is not seated as far behind the neck. It's kind of right in line with the ears, like they're at the top of a press, kind of. So if you look at like how the elimination of the big upper body strength exercise was in weightlifting, it's completely changed the way that people jerk.
Right.
Because they aren't able to press 20 kilos less than they jerk, which a lot of those guys were pressing close to their jerk maxes.
That's which pretty is crazy. Ridiculous. Yeah. So like those exercises where they're progressive, right? So the one builds the next one, builds the next one, builds the next one. Are there any exercises that we do that are like a dead end progression? They don't really have anything that they carry over to, but it's still important to do them aside from like the deadlift and the squats.
Well, I mean, I think that there's exercises that I like to throw in that maybe don't have like direct carryover to the lift, but do have carryover to joint and tendon health. So, you know, for some people who I know are fairly tight, I like to use dumbbell pullovers, because it's just a way to kind of make them stretch their lats and, you know, work through some range of motion with a light weight. I think that, you know, doing curls or tricep pushdowns with the band, or, you know, skull crushers with the bar, again, with kind of lighter weights every now and then, is just good to, if you're like me and have kind of sore elbows, doing some hammer curls at the beginning or end of a workout can just kind of loosen them up a little bit and tend to make me feel a little bit better. But no, I think that pretty much everything has carryover, because you're trying to get strong as a unit. So if you're, you know, able to row more weight, you're going to have a stronger back and be able to hold position better on a clean. I think they all kind of play in together quite a bit.
Right. So like, I like good mornings, because they strengthen that lower back. Yeah, it doesn't really have a whole lot of like specific carryover, but having a stronger lower back, being able to arch that back a little more to, once again, increase that correct postural position, or that strong postural position. I think those are good lifts.
Good morning's another really good example of an exercise that's important how you do it. Because a lot of times what you see happen with a good morning is people will let their toes come up as they push their hips super, super far back. And that is hard, for sure. But it's even harder if you keep your toes down and work on leaning over, keeping a full foot balance while you do your good morning. Because when you're pulling off the floor, the positions you need to be strong in are a full foot position. If you're pushing the hips so far back that you're kind of keeping the bar closer to your center instead of letting that bar go out way in front of your base, I think that there's difference in carryover between how you do your good mornings, especially.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a balance exercise too. It's about keeping the body and the bar in balance. So that also has carryover, because if the bar and the body don't stay in balance, then you miss lifts. If you don't take the bar with you when you're pulling, you're going to miss a lift. If the bar pulls you forward, you're going to miss a lift. So I think being able to maintain that position in the good morning is very important as well. So what else? What else is important as far as like strength and conditioning stuff, or things that a general strength in building a weightlifter?
I think that it's easy to neglect unilateral exercises. So I've been trying to incorporate into our kind of like pre-competition phases more single leg RDLs, box step ups, lunges, get things that get people moving a little bit differently, because weightlifting is really repetitive, and that is where a lot of like the overuse injuries, like nagging elbow or knee stuff, come from. So kind of getting out of that element and doing some Turkish get-ups or kettlebell windmills. I like Cossack squats, the feet really wide, kind of rocking side to side, doing a single leg squat with the leg straight to the side. I think those are basically all the flexibility movement kind of stuff. So doing single leg good mornings or deadlifts, single arm presses, or, you know, holds overhead. I think those things are important to build into the program early on, because it's just a way of kind of increasing work capacity and, I guess, just general athleticism. Like, if you're comfortable moving through a variety of positions, if you have to move a little bit weird to stay under that jerk, but you've been doing so many Turkish get-ups that you're really comfortable with like having your feet in a split with an unstable load overhead, I personally think that you're probably going to be a little more likely to make, you know, be able to like move and save things.
Right.
If you're just like not used to just going straight up and down all the time.
Yeah, and weightlifting is very singular in its plane of movement, right? So we don't have a lot of twisting motions. So I think it's important for people in generally in any athletic capacity to be able to move in multiple planes of direction. So a lot of twisting movements are kind of absent from weightlifting, and there's accessory exercises that kind of help with that, side planks, and I like those Russian V twists.
Yeah.
And then there's different variations of like having a band attached to like a pillar or a bar or something, and then just rotating, working that rotational strength, and that can carry over into the jerks as well, because sometimes jerks get a little sideways, or snatches might get a little sideways.
I don't mind you.
Yeah, so being able to keep the bar held or rotate back to a more stable position is pretty important. And then another thing was when people work on like small muscle groups, like pull-ups and things like that. I like to work on pull-ups. I like that upper body strength to be able to be maintained, and push-ups too. So like I don't like bench pressing, but I like doing push-ups, and I'll do a weighted push-up with like a weight on my back, or just regular push-ups. I mean, a lot of people
forget how hard push-ups are.
Push-ups can be really tough, and it's easy to kind of just say, oh well, it's just your body weight, but there's a lot of people that can't really do their body weight either. So a lot of those general strength exercises are really important to continue to build athleticism, not just weightlifting. And one thing I really like is jumping exercises, whether it's box jumps, long jumps, and I like jumps like back squat jumps with a barbell. Yeah. And they don't have to be really heavy. Usually it's like 25%-ish of your back squat, but being able to generate power out of the bottom, I think really has a positive impact on your athleticism, and it has carryover into your weightlifting skill as well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, something that really surprised me, and I hadn't done them until maybe a year and a half ago or so, but doing box jumps from a dead stop bottom of your air squat. So squat all the way down and stop and then jump from that position. And I was really surprised with how difficult that was. It was definitely way harder than just kind of cocking and going.
Yeah.
So I think all of those exercises and where the challenge comes in with programming is saying, you know, what's our priority right now? What are we going to work on? And that's, you know, the fun part is piecing these things together to create a cohesive plan to build people toward that 1RM in week 12.
Right.
But the foundation of laying things in that weeks, you know, 1 through 4 is, you know, I think a nice important time. Because I've been experimenting a little bit with, you know, not pushing those accessory exercises as much in my own training, but just doing some light presses and pull-ups and, you know, like half the number of reps I could possibly do for pull-ups and, you know, some easy reps for press. But using those sort of things as, you don't have to kill yourself with your accessory work. The accessory work's there to make you feel a little bit better. So, like, you want to push things some days, but some days just do, like, finishing your workout with, like, 3 sets of 5 pull-ups and just kind of, like, hanging from the bar for a second or two in between is, I think, kind of good for recovery and just decompressing a little bit. And and sometimes it's fun to end with something that isn't really hard to do.
Yeah, it kind of gives you that confidence boost that you didn't completely get your ass kicked during the weightlifting session. Yeah, so there's a lot of things that you have to continually work on, and it's hard to work on everything all the time. So you want to kind of pick the things that have the most impact, the most carryover. But I think accessory work is probably the thing that most people neglect. Like, you should be doing abs and some back-related exercise every day. It doesn't have to be this extensive, you know, bodybuilding routine. But some sit-ups, some back extensions, hold a Superman hold, you know, a hollow hold. And it doesn't really take you that long.
And you can even integrate them into your warm-ups.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
I like exactly. to do back extensions when I warm up. I think, so a lot of that stuff is good. And it's a good habit to build. But also, you know, just keeping in mind, like, how you're doing the exercises matters. Like, make sure you're not just throwing stuff around or jerking it around. Like, control the weights. Try to make your form look really good. Because again, you want to decrease wear and tear. These exercises are supposed to help you, not get you injured.
Right. Yeah. It's just like, okay, so I talked about doing push-ups. There's a wrong way to do push-ups. To me, there is anyway. I like to go through the full range of motion. I like to focus on using the muscles in my, my pecs and then my triceps. And I don't let my midsection get sloppy. Like, I'm not doing the worm on the floor.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm trying to keep my back rigid, my core engaged, and pushing through that upper body. And then for jumping, I like to jump and land softly because that shows that I have control over the movement. If I'm jumping and then I'm just slamming my feet onto the box, like, to me, that's not really, you're missing the point of the exercise. Like, for me, because I like to have the ability to jump up, generate the power, and then to be able to land softly, absorb the shock with my legs. So that kind of carries over into my lifts because I have enough bodily awareness to move my feet into a position where I can catch the weight in a stable position and absorb the weight with my legs instead of just, you know, letting the weight jerk me around. So it's stuff like that. And learning to move well and bodily awareness makes you a better athlete, and it'll make you a better weightlifter.
Yeah, so we've got, it's next week already. We are going to leave on Wednesday for the American Open Series 3. But for those of you guys, you know, following our program, you know, after AO3, we're going to have kind of a easy week, let you guys get caught back up on work and school and whatever you missed being out of town for those 4 days. And then we'll be restarting from scratch. We're going to be doing a program that it has a lot of these accessory exercises in them. So, I mean, I really just want you to, you know, even if you're not in our club, who's listening?
Yeah, who's listening?
But, you know, take pride in how you do your accessory exercises, and you'll get a lot more out of them. So our focus is going to be back on movement quality, exercise variation, and we'll be hitting that. after we get some sleep coming back from Vegas.
4 days of Vegas.
Yeah, so we're both arriving, what, late Wednesday night?
Yeah, I'm getting there probably like 10:30 on Wednesday night, and I'll be there till late Sunday night. So I'm not going to miss anybody's session that's competing.
Perfect. So we've got a plethora of athletes competing all weekend. We're going to try to find some time Sunday between sessions to do another one of these. But, yeah, do you have anything else on accessory exercises or?
No, but since you bring up AO3, I know a lot, I don't know how many of our athletes listen to us outside of the gym. I'm talking about like the podcast and what we write in our articles, but, I know a lot of them have been struggling this last week because building up to a peaking phase kind of, you know, it's going to take its toll on you. You're hitting high percentage lifts and you're trying to do it on a consistent basis. And you're not going to hit all the lifts the same way every time. Like every week, every time you have a heavy single, you're not going to PR. And I think that they get too concerned with, oh, well, I didn't do as well as I did last week. Well, you're not going to. That, and I see them get discouraged, and sometimes they fall apart emotionally. And they're like, what am I going to do? Like, all my lifts feel terrible. I'm not strong enough anymore. I feel like everything's, you know, not going as well as it should. And so I'll have to reassure them that, hey, this is normal. You're a little beat up leading up to it. It's good that you get all this, you know, junk lifts out of the way and just save the best ones for the platform. And we'll give you that taper down. You're gonna feel good by the time you get on the platform. You'll be at your best, or is it at the best you can be?
Yeah, and I mean, so the principle behind what we're doing when we have these kind of peaking phases where it's fairly heavy and consistently so, is you're essentially trying to get to a state where your body will super compensate for the workload. So the reason we go lighter every third or fourth week, you know, is to give your body time to, we're beating it down and we're breaking it down. And when the load is lightened, it recovers back to being able to do what it did before, and then creates an adaptation that says, this is probably going to happen again. I need to be stronger. I need to improve a little bit. I need to deposit more muscle tissue. I need to ingrain this motor pattern. So when we're doing those heavy lifts toward the end, we're essentially overreaching a little bit where you're not recovering perfectly, because we're creating a stress to the system, and the body as an organism is going to respond to that stress. And as soon as we back those weights off and you get a little bit more recovered, you're going to come back stronger than you were at the end of that phase. So if you're hitting within a few kilos of the weights you wanted to do in competition, and maybe you're hitting one or falling one or two under in the snatch or hitting something in the clean and jerk, you're going to be able to do those weights. After that taper, you're going to feel way better. And getting through those kind of mentally tough times of, this doesn't feel how I want, or even those times of, everything hurts and the only thing I know how to do is snatch, and that's the only thing that doesn't hurt. I can't brush my teeth, but I can snatch. Having those days where you're just so sore. I know at last week, I didn't think I was going to be able to Monday and Tuesday, and I was just beat up and achy and sore, and was able to come in and get through a workout thanks in large part to ibuprofen. Yeah. But I know that no matter how shaky or tired I'm feeling there, once I'm actually recovered for the first time in weeks, it's going to be easy. Yeah. So keep in mind that, you know, the training is harder than the competition if we do this right. The competition is going to feel like the easiest thing you've done in 12 weeks, because it will be.
That's a good way to look at it. Training is more difficult than competing. I never thought about it that way before, but yeah, you're right. So with a lot of these programs, you know, Grayson programs that week where you do have a back off, and that doesn't mean skip that week. Yeah, it's a little bit less intense, it's a little bit less percentages, less weight, but that doesn't mean just, oh well, I'm I'm only going to be doing 5 snatches at 50% on Monday and maybe 6 clean and jerks at 60% on Wednesday and then some accessory work on Tuesday and Thursday. And that doesn't mean skip that week, right? That means that you're going to be doing a little bit less percentage-wise and intensity-wise than you would normally. And it's for that time for your body to adapt and to kind of let it recover, let it catch up.
So
a lot of people, they'll just be like, oh well, it looks like the program's too easy this week, I'm just not going to go. That's not the point of a back off week. And so this week
you still have to keep practicing,
right? Yeah, you still have to keep your technique sharp. So like for me, I don't like taking a long period of time off. So in my previous cycle after Masters Nationals, I took a complete week off. And when I came back, I felt like garbage. Everything hurt. I was slow. I felt stiff and sore. So instead of just taking a bunch of time off, I should have just kept it light, just transitioned into my next program leading up to Masters Worlds. So with this period that we're at right before AO3, this back off week is that, a back off week. Make sure that you're doing the things that you need to do to recover and be at your best on the platform, but don't take a whole bunch of time off after AO3 is done and just say, oh, well, I'm going to go on vacation, I'm going to do this, and your technique's going to kind of like fall. I know a lot of your strength you can maintain for a little bit longer, but technique-wise, unfortunately, if you don't snatch and clean and jerk consistently, it's going to start to fall apart. So for me, I'm already ready to go into the next cycle. I just got done competing at Masters World. 2 weeks later, I'm competing at AO3. And I feel kind of beat up and tired, but I'm going to do this meet, and I'm going to take a lot of time to work on some of the things that I know need to be worked on. And Grayson's going to help me with that, and everybody on the team with that. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a good time. I think, competitions are fun and lifting heavy is fun, but I really like the part where I get to work on building strength and technique and speed. I enjoy the rep work and just getting consistent, because that's the part that I think is really fun, is the practice of like, I'm just trying to get as good as I possibly can at this.
Yeah, and so competition is great and it's fun and it's good to enjoy it, but training for me is fun. Like, I like being in the gym. I like doing the training session, and I try to do as many lifts as precise and as well as possible, like they were going to be done on the competition platform. And I've adopted Grayson's idea of, I'm practicing 50 kilos, I'm practicing 60 kilos, I'm practicing 80 kilos. It's not, it's just a warm-up lift. So to me, I'm starting to say, well, this lift matters. It's 50 kilos. I'm practicing 50 kilos. And 80 kilos is the same. Like, my movement pattern didn't change, just the intensity and the effort that I brought to the lift. So I'm adopting that, and I'm going to continue to adopt that into the next phase of the cycle. When the lifts are light, they matter just as much as when I'm trying to go for a heavy single. So these small percentages and the high volume that we're going to be doing, I'm going to try to do as many reps as precisely as possible. And that's why I enjoy training. It's just a mental break from everything else in my life. I can train hard. It gives me that... it's not a hamster wheel effect, but it's something that I've brought into my routine in my life that just keeps me going. It keeps me doing hard things, put me out of my comfort zone, and it just allows me to bring meaning to my existence.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot of fun to just put in the hard work. And competition's kind of, that reward for a job well done. You get to go out and... I personally don't compete super seriously. I like to just kind of like treat it like it's a training day, because it, in 100 years, it's not going to matter what you lifted. So have fun with what you're doing. You're not doing it for the history books. You're doing it for you.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So enjoy what you're doing. It's fun.
Right. And even if you do end up in the history books, they'll change the weight classes on you, and it'll just get shoved aside anyway.
You'll be left as nothing but a name on a Wikipedia article.
Right. All right, folks. That's all I have. Unless, Grayson, do you want to, anything else on the table?
I think we can get this one done fairly quickly. We're going to give ourselves a 10-minute time cap for this one so we don't keep you guys all day. But my question today involves intent. So do you think that you can do good things for bad reasons? So do you think that if you have put a lot of time in and built a nonprofit operating a soup kitchen for homeless people, you're doing a good thing. You're contributing to society in a good way. But if your intent is that you did that because you want to be powerful and control other people, is that doing a good thing for a bad reason? Another way to think of this is, if you are not a homicidal maniac because you feel it's morally abhorrent to end the life of another organism or another person, you know, to shut someone's consciousness down, versus the only reason you're not doing that is you're afraid to go to jail, is that doing a good thing for a bad reason? And does that actually change how we should look at that action?
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's...
How much does intent matter?
I think intent really matters. I think you can do good things for a bad reason, or not for the not right reason. And I think a lot of it just revolves around ego, right? So let's say, like in my instance, let's say I want to be a national coach, right? And you have athletes that you're coaching and that you've built up, and then I come along and I try to take credit for your athletes. I didn't do anything to help get them there. I didn't do anything to you know, help them progress as people or athletes, and I just want to take credit. That's a bad intent, because it's just ego. Like, I just want the title. And like, for me, I'd rather build up my own athletes. I'd rather take people that are starting out and, you know, build them up to that position and help them get there. And if I'm never a national coach, that's fine, you know, but if I can help you do that as well and continue to build up athletes and help them get better, then if I never get the title, I'm okay with that. Because if that's all that matters, then I'm doing it for the wrong reason. And it's like people when they have children, right? I'm doing a selfless act. It's like, no, you're not. That's just another part of you that you're trying to, you know, throw off into the world. Like, you're not, having a child is not the greatest thing you can do. It's selfish. You're just like, I'm great. I'm going to throw more of me out into the world. So like, it's a bad reason. For me, like, that's the way I think about it. But on the other hand, not killing people because you don't want to go to jail is bad too. Like, because if you have the capability to say, I would murder that person if I could get away with it, that, yeah, that's not a good intent either. So I think you can do, I wouldn't say good things, but you don't do something awful because you just don't want to get in trouble for it. So I think that is trying to do something for the wrong reason.
But the interesting thing to me, and the problem I have with this idea of like whether or not intent really matters, is that guy's still not killing people. So the result is obviously a positive.
Yeah.
But is it a truly good act? And then, you know, it's the, like, if you're, you know, doing a lot of volunteer work, but you're doing it to, like, attract the attention of somebody and, like, manipulate them into wanting to be with you, or, you know, there's a ton of reasons that people do things that are helpful and objectively helpful. But do the reasons that those people do those things are, like, do those matter? Like, if you meet a doctor and he's, like, found a cure for a new disease, but the only reason he wanted to do that was to show how powerful he was or how much money he could make, is that still as good of an action as if his intent was, you know, like a personal belief that, you know, he wants to ease suffering, you right. know? So like, yeah. You can do the same thing, but I just don't, like, it's fun to think about, like, if the intention behind what you're doing matters.
Right. Cause like, well, like I said, it goes back to ego. Cause like, if you wanted to be a doctor, Are you doing it because you genuinely want to help people? Or do you want the title? You want the prestige? You want the paycheck, right? So you could say, oh, well, you know, I'm helping people. I'm helping them from injury, or I'm helping them from their disease. I'm a heart surgeon. I'm helping people continue to live. But how much do you get paid to do it? Like, do you get mad when somebody doesn't call you doctor or doesn't give you the respect? Because that's ego.
Yeah.
And ego, if you're... I think ego goes along with intention, right? If you have a good intention and your ego is low, you will do that thing regardless of whether you get recognition for it or not. But if you have ego and your intention is attached to it, then you're going to say, oh, well, I'm donating these clothes to the Goodwill, but I want a receipt for my taxes later. Like, I want a tax break on what I donated. So if you're in a nonprofit, let's say you go over to some other country and you help build wells, but then you put that like on your resume, like, did you really go over there to help do that, or did you want that as a stepping stone to help you progress in something else later?
Well, yeah, and I mean, I think you know, we might have to revisit this topic because yeah. There's a lot to unpack,
right? Yeah,
but it kind of comes back to the, is altruism like really a true thing? Like, does anybody do anything for non-selfish reasons? Or do even when you do good things, like if the only thing you get out of it is that you feel good, that you help somebody, you still got something out of that interaction. So is that still altruism?
Huh. So like if you do something that benefits other people, right? But you do it because you want to like yourself, is that still altruism?
Yeah.
Because if the only reason you're doing things is because it helps you feel good,
that's still intent.
Yeah. Is it? Yeah. It's really, it's a hard question to say, because you should do things for other people because it makes the world better.
Yeah.
It progresses, you know, everybody's ability to, you know, be a better person. But why do you even want to be a better person? Like, for who? Like, why does it matter? Like, who's going to declare you a better person? Who are you being good for?
Yeah, and even if you're only doing it for feeling like you yourself have done some good in that day, because helping people feels good. That's why I love coaching. I think it's a great like way to interact and actually, you know, have an impact on people day to day. But, you know, I don't think it's totally selfless though. I like doing it. I feel good when I help people squat more weight. Like it's fun for me. So like it's you know, is anybody truly altruistic, or, you know, that it's that pessimistic view of, you know, it's, you know, it's like, are you using people to just make yourself feel better?
It's cynical.
Like, are you using
cynical. I like it.
But it's, you know, it's hard to distinguish, because for every, you know, name it, there's something that you get out of it. Otherwise you wouldn't do it at all.
Right.
And if it takes to have a better world to incentivize, you know, the carrots and sticks, like, yeah, we're going to try to make people not kill each other, so now you have to go to prison. There's still people that would be doing this, but they're too scared of prison. So at least, so we didn't fix them, but the world's a slightly better place.
Yeah. Yeah. you don't go on a mass murder spree because you don't want to be holding somebody's pocket in, you know, a max security prison. It's difficult because maybe we're not all as good as we think we are. You know, we have those memes where it says, be kind, treat others with respect. And is it because we want to be treated with kindness and respect? Or it just makes us feel good because we treat other people with kindness and respect?
Or you want to be thought of as the kind of person that says to treat people with kindness and respect.
So.
It's that, what image do other people have of you?
Huh.
I think there's a lot that goes into it, but I really do feel like intent has to matter.
Intent matters, yeah.
And, you know, because we look at it when it's on the other side, like people thinking they're really doing the right thing, accidentally doing something horrible. That happens a lot, and I think that we weigh those things differently. Like, it's like, oh, he really tried to do this, but he accidentally, you know, caused something horrible to happen, right? You know, or like, and I think we're more forgiving with that. So then it has to go the other way, where you can do, like, be doing a good action, for a really nefarious purpose.
Right.
And does that really count as still, you know, putting good out into the universe? Or is that, you know, where you're kind of like, is there still darkness attached to that? Like, is that still gross?
You're manipulating karma.
Yeah.
This is a beautiful topic. We might want to expand on this in the future, but unfortunately we're running out of time. I don't have anything else. Grayson, do you have anything else?
Wish us luck in Vegas. We're going to be caffeinated and tired, and we'll try to put another podcast out while we're out there. Have a good week of lifting. And if you're out in Vegas and you're one of the 11 people that listen to this podcast that we don't know personally, look for us. Come say hi.
Yeah, definitely come say hi. All right, y'all. Happy lifting.